podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Liverpool's WSL Review Show. I've got Neil Atkinson, the BBC's Emma Sanders, after a very busy week. Thank you, Emma, for joining us, and John Gibbons alongside me to talk through all the highs and lows of Liverpool's season, their first season back in the WSL. And Emma, let's start at the start, because the Chelsea game on the opening day, it felt like really should have set the tone for the rest of the season. And the first half of the season didn't really transpire that way, but it was an early sign that they could compete at this level and an early positive sign that they were going to be involved in every game and really fight in every game. And that's exactly what Matt Beard was hoping for.
Yeah, 100%. I never really doubted that they wouldn't be able to compete in the league. I thought they were going to be fine. I wasn't ever really too worried about kind of fighting off relegation. But I definitely didn't see them beating Chelsea on the opening weekend of the season. So, yeah, for sure, I think it was a real shock for everyone. It definitely put down a bit of a marker to say, look, we're not here. We're not pushovers. We're here to compete. And I think they caused Chelsea some real problems. And the best thing about it was that it wasn't just a sit back and just see whether we can get a corner and nick a goal on a set piece. Liverpool were creating chances and they were causing problems for Chelsea as well. So don't get me wrong, Chelsea created chances as well. They always will. But I think the way that Liverpool played out that opening game was perfection, really. And I think it showed the heights that they could reach. And I think they did reach in patches throughout the season. But it was the perfect start, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, Neil, Emma mentioned the patches there. And you have to look back at the kind of patch after that game where there was defeats to Everton, Tottenham, Arsenal, Man City in there. Matt Beard was speaking after the season. He did a bit of review and he said, we've had lots of up and downs over the course of the year and we had a tough start. What were some of the things that you think made it so difficult for them in that early period when they were trying to adapt and get up to speed with the WSL?
I think the first thing is immediately it's the quality of the opponents. You know, if you now actually go through that run of fixtures that you've just done there, you know, Chelsea win the league, Everton finish above Liverpool. There's obviously the game there against Tottenham, and Tottenham's season in the end flatters to deceive a tiny little bit. But at that point in time, I think people thought they were going to be far better up the table. Arsenal and Manchester City are both, you know, markedly better. And even then, the next game is Aston Villa, and they, you know, they get a really, really strong finish in the league as well. And you know, that you can't therefore underestimate the value of the win against Chelsea, because the one thing that they, all the way through the season, I think the one thing that you can really credit this Liverpool side for is it always just keeps the wolf from the door in terms of the idea of panicking a little bit. It always manages to have a nice, get itself a teeny bit of a cushion, get itself something in there that maybe, just maybe, you know, you might not have entirely expected. And I think that's invaluable for being able to have the season be one that doesn't just become about survival, but becomes a little bit about development as well. You know, you've only got to look at the way Leicester's season ends up, which is one of, you know, degrees of panic, if we're all honest about it. They do brilliantly in the end to stay up, but it, you know, it goes all the way to the final day, and that's because they don't win a single game for the first 10. And within that, there is the disparity within the league. You know, it is a perfectly valid point to say that, you know, Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester City and this season Aston Villa are all markedly better than Liverpool and are in better shape. And then Everton and Tottenham, you know, as I say, the time that you play side sometimes matters. And so Liverpool needed that. And I think that is what's the toughest thing about this league. You know, when you look at it all the way through and look where it's ended up, you know, I still think there's a conversation, and maybe we'll get to it as we go through talking about the season, whether or not Liverpool are top of group three in this league or whether or not the bottom of group two. And I think that how that pertains to real life going into next season, a lot of that comes down to transfer business and things like that. But you know, that's where the campaign ends up, and that win against Chelsea going all the way back to that first day just massively helps Liverpool ensure that they're not going to be the ones who are the most panicked in the division. And I think that really helps them eventually find the feet and then helps them play with a level of freedom in the games that they're going to go on and be successful against.
Yeah, John, they were never the most panicked, but there was definitely spells where it was difficult and there was difficult periods. I'm going to continue on the theme of covering the lows before we get to all the highs of the season, but losing Leanne Kiernan on the opening day was a massive blow, just in terms of the forward options that Matt Beard then had available. He didn't bring in Shanice van der Sande and Tash Dowie until later on. So how significant was that injury to Liverpool's start to the season?
Well, Shanice actually comes in the summer. She's just not available. And so it was a big blow, because the manager went, I thought we'd do more signings in the summer, and the manager, I think he only gets five in, and two of those are reserve goalkeepers. And so he he wants to keep faith by and large with what got him there, and I think which is good in a way and is nice. And I think, you know, it's almost a case of, well, we'll see. I think he used the season as almost, well, we'll see who we've got, who can take us forward, and then we'll look to sort of grow from there. But I think he always felt like he would, that the squad was capable of doing all right and doing better than all right. But Liam was one, when you watch the cup games from the previous year, Liam was the one for me who looked the most at home playing against Super League teams. And I remember, you know, even the Arsenal game where I think they get done three or four, you know, she's a thorn in the side. She didn't get huge amounts of the ball because Arsenal were the better team, but when she got it, she was really dangerous. And I was really looking forward to seeing her in the Super League because, as I said, those cup games, you know, she'd look really strong. And so it was a blow, really, because you felt, you know, almost straight away that we were losing, you know, not just a big player, but also the one who had not quite proven that they could take the step up, but had shown themselves the most likely. So, yeah, it was tough. And then, you know, all the sort of silence, if you like, sort of haven't really worked out. You know, Gilly Fahity, you know, doesn't finish the season at Liverpool. And she was, you know, the one who's sort of coming from a first team point of view. I've mentioned Shanice van der Sanden as well. And Kovista, who I know you're going to go and talk about, but I felt started slowly. I thought that game at Anfield against Goodison, which was a real low, if we're talking lows, that was my lowest point of the season, that, because for the second year, well, the second time in a row, you know, if you count sort of the few years back, the games, home game against Everton, they haven't really shown up. And, you know, those games, you know, all eyes on you, big crowds, and they need to do better, really. And I felt like she was definitely a fault for one goal and maybe sort of a couple, but I was expecting a bit more, but then finishes the season really well. And so, yeah, there was, I mean, the Chelsea game that you mentioned before, like, maybe sort of, you know, was fantastic, and I loved it. And I was, you know, down at Prince's Park that day and a bag of nerves in stoppage time, I remember. But it maybe gave us a bit of a false sense of security, really. And maybe, you know, it was always likely to be tough. But yeah, there were some tough days, you know, in that first half of the season. You know, there's obviously the 6-0 against United, which was the real, yeah, we need to do a lot in January. And to be fair, they did. But yeah, that Everton one at home was a real wake-up call as well, because you knew that Everton team weren't going to be challenging for the title, but they were head and shoulders above Liverpool that day.
Yeah, and Emma, I think the injury to Liam, what it did as well, is made it difficult for Matt Beard to work out exactly how to set up against certain opposition. Sometimes he played 4 at the back, sometimes he played 5 at the back. In his season review, he said about tactical challenges and how difficult they found it, just how to figure out how to come up against certain opposition. What challenges in particular do you think that he experienced throughout the season, and particularly in the early parts?
Yeah, well, the formation one, I think, is a really interesting topic, because I remember speaking to him in the summer after they'd been promoted from the Championship. So before they'd even, you know, really started thinking too much about the WSL, and obviously the transfer window hadn't really kicked in then. And he already said then that he knew he was going to have to switch up the way that they played, because the style that worked in the Championship worked for the Championship, but it was never going to work in the WSL against every team, because there's so many different styles in the WSL. And I do think that is one of probably the biggest difference between the Championship, is that, yeah, every team really is quite markedly different. So we've seen him switch from a back 3, back 5, back 4 at times. And it's interesting when you look at the types of the opposition. So made a bit of a list here, but yeah, so against sort of your Chelsea's and your Man City's, you know, he went with like a back 5, which was interesting because obviously they overload in wide areas. So you can see why he wants kind of more players inside the box for when those crosses come in. And then you look at who he played a back 3 against, and it's your Man United and your Villa, where for them it's more about kind of keeping possession and trying to go through the middle perhaps a little bit more. And then your back 4 was obviously against the likes of Brighton, where Liverpool could be a little bit more attacking. So when you break it down and you look at what he did against each team, you can see the thought process. And I think it was just about, obviously, Matt Beard working which teams it worked better against for. the players themselves obviously being able to adapt and switch every week, because they'd gone a whole season pretty much in the Championship playing a very specific way. And then obviously the injuries played a massive part, because, you know, you go in with a plan and then suddenly you lose, you know, one of your best forwards. You signed another one, which was a marquee signing in Shanice van der Sanden. And that was obviously one that was designed to be a player with pace. So when you do set up in a system against someone like a Chelsea, and then you then want to hit them on the counter-attack, and then you lose the fastest player in the squad that you signed in the summer in order to do that, it has a knock-on effect on everything. So I think there was plans that were put in place, put in place in order to get specific players in the transfer window. Some of them got injured. Some of them they weren't able to bring in. As John said before, you know, five players coming in. I think Matt Beard wanted to keep a lot of the squad together, but they definitely missed out on several targets that they wanted in the summer transfer window. And that obviously meant they had to then go and spend and work a lot harder in January than perhaps they would have wanted to, because they just didn't really get the job done in the summer. So I think all of these things had an impact on the first 6 months. And in the end, I actually thought, considering how tough the opponents were that Neil mentioned before, the fact that they got through to kind of Christmas time and they at least had a couple of wins in the bag, I would have liked to have seen a few more. But yeah, the one against Chelsea certainly helped them. And I actually thought they were in an okay position, all things considered, considering, you know, all of the big injuries and the fact that they kind of messed up the transfer market a little bit.
Yeah, we will come on to the highs in January and beyond. After one more point, Neil, which I just want to talk about the cup runs, because we go out of the FA Cup and the Conti Cup relatively early. And I think that comes in a time where the mood is probably a little bit low there. As John mentioned, there was the 6-0 defeat to Man United in there. There was the general struggle away from home and that struggle against top teams. It would have just been nice to have a bit of a boost by getting through another round of one of those cups.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think that's something to certainly have an eye on going into next season's campaign. The idea of getting a little bit of a cup run, not least because it's a side that's, you know, with the exception of that Manchester United away game, the other sort of quite significant positive through a lot of this is that whilst, you know, I think there's a few of the games in there that you can talk about where you can sort of say, listen, you know, there was a bit of a rear guard action, you know, Manchester City away being a good one. But there, for instance, they do create a couple of opportunities of their own and, you know, do threaten a little bit. The Everton one being a low point, they don't get whacked by anybody. And I think them not getting whacked again, this idea of keeping the wolf from the door and feeling like, you know what, it's not that bad. We can still, you know, all the way through, there's still a bit of a buffer between us and what's happening to other teams. Other teams are getting whacked. We're getting whacked back then at that stage of the season. When they hit the turn, Brighton and Leicester have got almost, you know, minus 20 goal differences from 9 or 10 games. And we didn't have that. That didn't happen to us in the same way at all. So I think within that framework, they're able to say, and what I mean by this is for a cup run next season, they've at least got a bit of evidence of them being able to say, we can compete. Competing isn't the same as winning, and it'll take a little bit of time. I think that's a next season job. I think this season was just solely about hanging in there, getting out of this, you know, ensuring that we stay as comfortably as we can in this campaign this season. I think one more bit of an adventure, yes, you know, one more round or something like that, but there is such a thing here as, you know, it happens, I think, in all football, really. You know, there's such a thing here as looking at effectively, you know, who it is that you get when you're talking about a cup run. They were in a Conti Cup group with Manchester City in it, and that's what sort of does for them there at the very end of that little run. And then they're also in they get in the fourth round of the Women's FA Cup. They've got to go to Chelsea and get something. And you know, the truth of the matter is sometimes it just breaks that way. You know, you've got to go to Chelsea away. It's actually quite a brave performance where they get beat 3-2. But you know, it's not. It just goes that way from time to time. I think you've just, you know, the league is everything for them this season. And you know, they did manage to get the turning point moments when they needed them.
I'll come back to you, Neil, because you mentioned Chelsea and City there, and it is that gap, isn't it, that does exist between teams like Liverpool, who are probably, as you mentioned earlier, kind of the bottom of the mid-table, top of the bottom of the table pack, and the teams at the very top who have, it feels like, become more established, got the players that they want and had a bit more time to really establish themselves and work well in the league. And that is what you're dealing with now, this really strong group at the top and then kind of everyone else. But where do you see Liverpool fitting in all of that?
Well, I mean, I cheat on this because I use the stats, and you know, the XG difference inclusive effectively is it's this tale of this tape. You know, Manchester United's is plus 1.26, Chelsea's is plus 1.27, Arsenal's 1.3, and Manchester City's 1.4. Now, actually, that's not how they end up finishing in the league over the course of the campaign. City finished fourth, level on points with Arsenal. But my point is more what that's telling you is these sides are just markedly better than everyone else. The next one then is Villa, who are 0.19, and then everyone else is in negative equity, as it were. Liverpool are next, actually, at 0.33, which I think goes back to my, you know, my earlier point about them not getting whacked. It's not just the idea that some days the goalkeeper has a blind, although that does happen from time to time. It's also that, you know, Liverpool weren't getting absolutely pulled apart and embarrassed a lot of the time. They had rocky moments, don't get me wrong, and there was that Manchester City away game in question. But apart from that, it wasn't like, you know, oh God, we're about to ship loads and loads of goals. That, you know, that just sort of doesn't happen. Liverpool concede 39. The two teams at the bottom concede 63 and 57 in there. So, you know, I think Liverpool concede 39 and Everton concede 36 and Villa, who finished fifth, concede 37. That's where Liverpool sort of are on the conceding point. The issue was, you know, whether or not there was the removal of shackles, the ability to be able to be creative going the other way. But, you know, fundamentally, those stats, both the goal difference numbers and the expected goal difference numbers, I think tells the story of effectively what you've got here, which is that there are four sides this season. I think there have been four sides who were absolutely dominant. Then you've got a really, really brave, clever season from Villa. And then I think you are sort of able to say, looking at the underlying numbers, where Everton end up and so on and so forth, that it is a bit of it's then everyone else to a degree. You know, Everton's stats end up poorer than Liverpool's and poorer than Tottenham's. So I think you can sort of make that argument to an extent. And then out the back, massively, far twice as bad as Everton, twice, and then worse for West Ham. You know, Leicester, West Ham, Brighton and Reading are all twice, or in Reading's case, three times as bad as Everton on those underlying numbers. And that's how this league breaks down. And that's the reality, because you're talking here about the quality of footballer that those four sides at the top have got. The quality of football you put on the pitch all the time, it's, you know, it is exceptional. And you do get to see the difference when you watch the games. It's there. You don't need numbers to do it. It's there with your very eyes.
Yeah, and John, on that note, then it's important that Liverpool pick their moments and got points and picked up results against teams that they felt like they could get a win over. And one of those was West Ham. And the win in December felt like a real turning point for the season. The January transfer window wasn't open yet, but they needed to start getting a bit of momentum behind them. And how significant do you think that result was, winning against Matt Beard's former side?
Yeah, it was, yeah, because, you know, West Ham, it felt like a decent team. You know, we were beaten. And I think winning your home games is always important, and certainly winning the home games against teams who are likely to be around you, you know, felt important as well. So, yeah, I remember that one. It felt like a good one. It was a 2-0. And, yeah, you could see, you know, Liverpool's dangerous players in that. It's goals from Haaland and Stengel, who I think have been the standout players, you know, all season. I think in particular in that first half, they were really impressive. And I think
they made them, John, don't they? They absolutely made them.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, like you say, Harriet, this is before the signings sort of come in, and this is before the changes. But I think it might be Van der Sanden's first start, or certainly one of the first.
I can't
ones
believe really. She was there in December. That's really blowing my mind. I was like really like convinced that she's only been here since January.
I mean, she started to really cook after that, but but no, she was sort of a, you know, and I remember, you know, you start to see what it looks like, and you start to see, I think, in that game, you're like, oh, okay, well, this is how Liverpool are going to get from it. And I don't think at any point I was really worried, partly because it's only one down and I always felt like there'd be one team worse than Liverpool, but 3 points certainly helps, and 3 points when you're in the position that Liverpool were at that time shoots you up the table. And yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, and Emma, we go into January in ninth, and we brought in five players, and I remember us having a conversation at the time, and you weren't entirely sure whether Liverpool had done enough, whether they were the high calibre of players that Liverpool needed to get in to survive in the league. I'll go through the list of who Liverpool did bring in: Natasha Dowie and Gemma Bonner, obviously returning to the top club, Sophie Lingard, Fuka Nagano, and Miri Taylor came in. Looking back now with the benefit of hindsight, do you think Liverpool did enough in that January transfer window, or would you still have liked to see players of a bit more high quality and a few more come through the door?
I think they did enough. I still think three out of the five probably didn't really make much of a difference towards the end of the campaign. Maybe I'm being a little bit harsh on Natasha Dowie. So yeah, maybe certainly, you know, two out of five for me didn't really work. Fuka Nagano obviously was the one that I was really excited about, and she absolutely lived up to her expectations and more. I mean, she was absolutely phenomenal, and what a player she's going to be. But yeah, for me, I still wanted us to bring in, just kind of a bit more quality up front, and maybe a little bit more quality in a fullback position. And I don't think we did that in January. I think that's absolutely priority for this summer, really. And from what I hear, we're definitely after a striker. In hindsight, looking back, I think it was, we certainly did enough in that window. But I think, you know, Fuka Nagano coming in, I think there was perhaps a little bit of a concern that because she was coming in mid-season and she's such a different player, she's never played in a league like the WSL before, I was worried that she was going to take a few months to hit the ground running. I never really doubted that she'd be a decent player, but how good she was going to be straight away, I wasn't sure about. And she absolutely hit the ground running, didn't she? So, that one certainly paid off. And credit to Matt Beard and the recruitment team in January, because, like you say, they definitely did enough to improve things in the second half. But ironically, I actually think it was more the players who kind of we already had at the club that maybe stepped things up a little bit more in the second half of the season. I thought, you know, Missy Bo Kearns, who's had loads of awards recently, I was disappointed with her first half of the season. I thought she was excellent in the second half. Obviously, Kerry Holland struggled with injuries a lot in the first half of the season. When we had her back in the second half, it was an absolute game changer. Obviously, Shanice van der Sanden being fit again. And then the likes of just seeing Leanne Kernan and Nifahe come back for like the last few games of the season was you know, a good addition as well. So I do think the January window helped, but it wasn't game changing in the season. I think it was just that players needed that little bit of time to gain that consistency, to build their form, and it all sort of came together at the right time, which it always seems to do. To be honest, I think if you've got a project in place and you've got a team that's building consistently and sustainably, which Liverpool have been doing now for about 18 months, then it is more of a progression than a kind of, you know, a 4 month or 6 month hit wonder, which we have seen some teams that come up to the WSL do, and then they then struggle dramatically the next season. I'm not worried about that, because I have seen Liverpool, this Liverpool squad now is better than it was 12 months ago when they came into the WSL. And I don't just mean personnel. I think they've improved in the squad in terms of personnel. I think the way that they've matured in the league has improved. Tactically, I think they've improved, and the adaptability of the squad as well, I think, has improved. So, transfer window helps, but I don't think it was what turned things around, but it definitely had an impact.
I think the main way I feel as though I had an impact from the games that I saw, especially in person, I think little things like, I think Gemma Bonner helps them get another 5 and maybe even 10 yards higher up the pitch, which makes it easier for Taylor Hines to play that wing-back role or full-back role, depending on what it is we're asking, because the starting position, she's not coming from 5 or 10 yards further. I was really frustrated at times watching Taylor in the first half of the season, and that continued a little bit into the second half as well. And it wasn't a question for me of a lacking aggression or lacking the ability to win the ball. It was that it always felt like she was just that split second late, because she was just starting from a deeper, but she had so far to come at times. It felt like, because Liverpool were sitting in a little bit too much. And I think that as the season wore on, maybe again, the idea that pressure's come off a little bit because of what's happening beneath them and the number of points they get on the board. So they feel as though they can be more progressive. But in the same way, I think, for instance, Kerry Holland, and it's worth remembering, you know, core ages of some of the footballers like Kerry Holland and Missy Bo Kearns in amongst this. Taylor Hines herself is 24. You know, there's something in a bit of growth and development. But I think, for instance, one of the things that Fuka Nagano does is she just makes it easier in patches, especially for Kerry Holland and Missy, to be able to play some football. In the same way that I think Gemma Bonner made it a bit easier for Covisto and Taylor Hines to be a bit higher up the pitch. And I think that at times you can, you know, you can overlook those little bits and pieces in amongst it all. And I think that that's what they did do more than anything, really, for Liverpool, more than any sort of standout, astonishing moment. I think they allowed those footballers to have a bit more of a platform. And as I say, I think the other thing that happens is they begin to be able to relax a little bit, despite the 6-0 turnaround to Manchester United. They do begin to be able to relax a little bit. And then from there, you know, I think that helps you just take a couple more chances, take a couple more risks, and then those risks bring rewards.
Yeah, building a platform, John, was really important. I think that's what they were able to do with a consistency of selection, particularly in midfield, and that Nagano, Holland and Missy Bow trio seemed to be a really consistent one in the second half of the season. How important was that in terms of a base to build the team around and a solid platform that they could go and build from? Because in particular, Neil just mentioned it there, Holland basically had the freedom to push forward with Nagano in the team. It all just felt like it clicked once they were playing consistently as a three.
Yeah, I think the trio element of it was massive. And listen, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you put one player somewhere and you take away from elsewhere. And, you know, you've got to sacrifice something somewhere. But I did feel like at times when we went 5-2-3, I thought we were just too light in centre midfield. And I understand what the manager wants to do. He wants to pace out wide, like Emma was talking about before, and falling into to Stengel. So I sort of got what he was trying to do, but I just thought it was too difficult for the two in the middle, especially if Kerry Holland wasn't playing. Kerry Holland, I thought, dealt with it the best. You know, in terms of, you know, the propensity to be outnumbered. But I thought once there was the three, it just really helped them. Emma again said before about Missy Bowen and how she's developed over the season. I think getting the extra body in there for her was massive, because it just gave her the license to kick on. And how many goals has she scored in the last 3 months? And big goals against good teams. You know, she's showing that threat. When she was in that too, I always felt like she could get a little bit lost. And this isn't me trying to be too critical, because it was dead hard. You know, you're often playing against sort of three in there, and I always felt like she didn't know whether to stick or twist, and ended up getting herself a little bit muddled. Whereas with a three, I felt like everyone's role was a lot more clear and a lot more identified. Obviously, they weren't getting outnumbered, which sort of always helped. But I just felt it was a lot more sort of defined, and they were so sure about what their roles were. It obviously helps when you've got someone like Fuka, who's A, just pure quality, but also, you know, is very defined about what she's doing on the football pitch. You know, she knows exactly what she's about, and she's going to do a lot of it. And then you can sort of, you know, position yourself, you know, around that, really. And I felt, you know, it was... You're right to say, Harriet, it was the fact that they got to build as a trio. But I think just putting three up there, even though it meant we had to sacrifice either someone at the back or more often than not someone up front, I think it was worth it, because it gave us that base. But then you then saw more from the fullbacks or the wingbacks as well, I think, because we were in more control of the games. So Taylor's getting forward more, Covisto on the other side. And so it just, although we all often lose in an attacker, it didn't really feel like we were necessarily a threat down, because we were getting more from midfield, more from wide areas. And I think Stengel actually enjoyed it more.
Yeah, for me, Emma, the biggest sign that things had really taken a positive turn was the draw at Goodison. And I can still look back at that goal and not understand why it was disallowed. And we don't want to go into that and dwell on it too much. But what I really saw that day was the upturning quality of Liverpool had lost that return fixture 3-0 at Anfield, and then they're going to Goodison and putting in a performance like that, and really should have come away from that winning the game. And not many of us even gave them a chance going into it.
Yeah, I think you're right to pick out that fixture, because if you were to pick out two games against the same opponent from one half of the season and the other and look at the differences and the contrast, and that is probably, you know, the one, because as we, you know, we all said before that game at Anfield, it was just so one-sided. Everton was like quite clearly the better team. It wasn't even close. Liverpool weren't competing. Maybe I'm being harsh, but I'd go as far to say that in patches it was perhaps a little bit embarrassing, because Liverpool just weren't really at that anywhere near, you know, the level. So to then go to Goodison and show such a difference in kind of firstly the performance, obviously the scoreline speaks for itself. But the performance for me was the real difference, because Liverpool were very much in that game, arguably the better team. And yeah, and it just showed like, yeah, the building confidence, the progression, the consistency, and yeah, and all those little sort of details which had all kind of been put together, and it felt more like a complete puzzle than it did do for that game at Anfield.
Yeah, there was a real sense of confidence, Neil, in that game, but then also in the latter half of the season. How much do you think that came from the fact that they guaranteed safety, not guaranteed it, but felt like they were going to be safe relatively early on once they started to string a few results together?
I think that's massive. I really do. And I think it was the minimum requirement for the season. I think that was the thing that everyone was absolutely together on, that had to happen. And when there's real clarity that that is in the process of happening, then I think it does allow there to be a little bit more freedom, a little bit more relaxation. I think they go and play. I didn't see the game, but I heard about it. They go and play out a pretty dire 0-0 draw with West Ham, but it got both Liverpool and West Ham a point. And I think that was the sort of moment where everyone went, both West Ham as well. I mean, you know, West Ham end up in and around Liverpool, but I think both sides at that moment were able to sort of go, right, that's sorted out. You know, West Ham didn't draw many games over the course of the season, but I think that was the real sort of, right, it's very, very unlikely now anyone comes up and catches us, because the way other results went at the same time. And I think from there, you know, that I'm not saying that was two teams that shook hands, but my God, what everyone said to me afterwards in the reports I read was that practically nothing happened for 90 minutes, and everyone came out of it very, very happy indeed. And I think that you know, that's the nature of it when you've only got one team that's going to go down as well, and there's no, because of the way the league is so fractured, there's no carrot to sort of look to desperately kick on. I think having that assurance and that relaxation, I think, matters. And then I think it does become a little bit of being able to still not want to get embarrassed, you know, even going all the way to the final game of the season against Manchester United, because that had gone 6-0. There's a real sort of stoutness from Liverpool that day that they weren't going to be made a show of again. And what's intriguing to me, looking back on the game that's just gone there on Saturday recently, what sort of grabbed my attention with it is, I think there's a little thing where Liverpool are, what's the word I'm looking for here? I think that they're at the most vulnerable when they feel as though we can get something against this United side. You know, the second half is when United go and make it 1-0. Liverpool, they're pushing forward and the tails are up a little bit because they fancy this at this point, because actually this United team, they haven't been any great shakes against us so far, and that's when United get in a couple of times and finally they get themselves the goal. That's something to watch going into next season, but simultaneously I think we want to see a Liverpool side that's front footed, and we get to see it, you know, at times as the season gets itself towards the conclusion there, you get to see a couple of Liverpool performances and feel as though where the ceiling is for this team is still there. And it's a funny league, and it's a difficult league, I think, at times to talk about for people because of the nature of the fact that it is 22 games and it is so fractured. I think acknowledging therefore within that how significant, for instance, even though you haven't won in six, winning against West Ham was in December, is a difficult thing to entirely contextualise, not least because at the same time, whenever anyone around you realistically is playing any of those top four teams, they're not getting to win any of those games either. So everyone's always going to come back to you at some sort of point. But I think you get to see Liverpool play more progressive, better football as we wear on through the season. You know, the 2-1 win against Tottenham's backed up with the draw at Everton, where they are the better side. That's backed up with the 0-0 at West Ham, where everyone sort of shakes hands, but then Liverpool beat Brighton, and that felt to me as though it was, you know, it was quite something to go through there. That's a really tidy run of genuinely solid form, and then they obviously have very hard lines and get battered at Leicester.
Just to jump in on what you were saying, Neil, about that win in December against West Ham being so important, I also think at the time I thought it was really disappointing when there was those draws against Brighton and Reading in November, but actually when you look back on it, those are the games that you can't lose, because then you're not giving those teams around you an opportunity to gain points.
Yeah.
So, you know, just getting a few wins in the bag, and obviously Liverpool went and got some big ones against Chelsea and Man City, which helped. But getting, you know, a couple of wins in the bag and then just getting draws against the team around you just means that, you know, you're not allowing them to pick up points. And I think that's equally as important when you're in that kind of relegation type battle in the WSL. So that was, I think that helped come January.
I think to add further context to that, you know, Liverpool, the sides that finished beneath Liverpool beat West Ham at home and draw 0-0 with them away. They end up splitting the difference with Tottenham for the 1-0 that I mentioned earlier in the season. And if that game comes later, there's every chance Liverpool get at least a draw from it. But they beat them 2-1. Leicester goes badly wrong, home and away. But they also, you know, the two teams that finish 11th and 12th, you know, Liverpool beat Brighton and draw away. They beat Reading at home and they draw away. And that means that it's 4 points versus one. And all there's three occasions there where it's 4 points versus one. And then anything that you get on top of there, which they do get from the games against Manchester City and Chelsea at home, they are just bonus points, and the great bonus points, and they're the bonus points that takes the pressure off. But, you know, if Liverpool do the same thing next season with the sides that finish, you know, if they take a minimum of 4 points from the sides that finish 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th and 12th next season, then they'll be in really, really good shape. And I think it is important, as Emma says there, to ensure that the opposition are not making any hay whatsoever when they're coming up against you, when they're your direct opposition.
Yeah, a player, John, that was undoubtedly played a key role in this was Katie Stengel. We've done over half an hour now and we've barely mentioned her, and I'm not sure how, because she was such a key figure. Obviously Liverpool's top goal scorer, but not only that, her hold up play, all the attributes that we talk about week in, week out when we're talking about Liverpool women, she really displayed this season. Just how critical was she and raising the whole game really for Liverpool, raising the standard and ensuring that they were going to survive the season, not just survive but thrive.
Yeah, a finishing is excellent. But you could be a good finisher in a top league in a team that's, you know, struggling at times and not get to show it because you're not getting enough chances or you're not seeing enough of the ball really. And you've seen, you know, in football, sides get promoted and someone who's got 20 goals in the season in the division below come up and get 3 or 4, and it's still the same player, and it's not so much as hi Ted. It's not so much that the defending is better. Ted went to loads of games this season. He should be joining in. It's not just the defending is better. It's more it's being sort of starved of the ball. So you need, if you're going to play up top in a team, especially on your own, in a team who's not always seeing as much ball as what you'd like, the ability to hold up the ball, the strength, everything that she shows, being able to run the channels, the close control, how well she beats a player, even though she's not rapid. It's just a little shimmy and a move of the ball, and she can get herself half a yard, and that's enough to find a teammate. Is arguably, I would say, more important than what she offers in front of goal, because it's massive for the team, really. The job that she does, I know she ends up the season sort of a bit battered and bruised and stuff like that as well, because, you know,
playing with really an injury, I think, for ages.
Yeah, I'm putting herself about. But she was a warrior first for the team, and everything that she did that just meant that, you know, we were able to get up the pitch, we were able to compete, we were able to take a little bit of pressure off ourselves and then maybe even get a bit onto the opposition. And me and Neil were chatting at the awards, Stu, about Stengel, and so apologies if I sort of steal Neil's points here. But I think, you know, when we were sort of having a bit of a debate on our table of player of the year, and it went to Kerry Holland, and I sort of agreed with that. But then Neil pointed out, well, who did we miss the most when they were out? And it was Stengel, like, massively. There was no one else who could do the job that she could. And, you know, that's not being too critical of the other forwards. That's just a testament to how good she is.
Seamless answer with Ted hanging on your arm there. Really impressed. 10 out of 10 for professionalism.
I'm used to it. You should try should try driving with him, honestly, asking endless questions.
Sorry, Neil, go on.
I think that, you know, the getting you up the pitch, when it's worth saying, you know, Liverpool finished the season at 8th, so let's say the table doesn't lie, and I don't think it particularly does. So finishing the 7th, but West Ham are only 2 points behind them. The idea that someone's getting you up the pitch and keeping you there and is able to do that over and over again, and they add that number of goals, and the point about being the sort of team Liverpool are, most of those goals that Stengel scores, they're important goals. You know, the big moments, it's important goals. It's not as simple, you know, she's not scoring the fourth in a 4-0 win, because Liverpool aren't winning 4-0. It's sadly, you know, these are the goals that matter. They're the ones that you need, and she's getting them as well. And I think it's a real perform. And all the way through the season, you know, at no point does she, not sulk, but at no point does she, what I mean is, does she do a bit of, hang on, I'm banging them in here, so why am I having to be absolutely battered at every throw-in? That doesn't stop. Why am I having to run every channel? That doesn't stop. Why have I got to chase every pretty much hopeless cause? She doesn't stop doing that either, and she turns a lot of them into causes that cease to be hopeless because the way she does it. And then the ability to, and I think it is the underrated ability, when she gets in front of a player, she's never quite entirely away, but they very rarely get back. They very rarely get back once she's got in front and shown a little bit of skill to get in front. And I think that helps massively as well. I think she's been a stunning performer over the course of the campaign. I really do. And I think that it's, you know, I think Liverpool will look to want to have other options in that area. But Liverpool got to be careful not to try to advance the team beyond literally its capabilities to work the ball up the pitch and hold it up the pitch, because you can do that stuff too quickly, and then you've got a really good forward that you brought in, but you can't get that one in the game in exactly the way you can get the one who basically gets you to the halfway line, then gets you to the final third, then when you're in the final third offers these other things. And I think it's been a tremendous season. I really do.
Yeah, Emma, one more player I want to touch on, because Matt Beard was the first net player that he actually mentioned when he was going through his review, and it was Koivisto. And I was quite surprised at that, because as John mentioned earlier, her start to the season was a bit difficult. How do you feel like she progressed as the season went on, and how was her development over the course of the however many months it is? 9, 8, 7? Who knows?
Yeah, 10,000 years. I think if anyone listened to like sort of the podcast back in the summer, she was the player that I was absolutely raving about. I was so excited about her coming because she'd been so consistent at Brighton. She's so clearly a WSL player. And I agree with what you said there, Harriet. I do think she started off quite slow. I think she maybe struggled with kind of the link-up play. And one of her biggest strengths at Brighton was kind of the fact that she was a bit more of a box-to-box right back, but the style that Liverpool played, you just didn't really have that kind of, you couldn't afford to be making sprints at one end because it was a lot more direct. It was a lot, you know, a lot more because of the strengths of Katie Stengel and because of the injuries, the fact that we didn't have, you know, the likes of Shanice van der Sande and Mel Lawley for a lot of the season. So I think she needed time really to kind of learn when to advance, when to hold back, how to sort of, you know, jockey with the back line a bit. And as Neil rightly said before, actually, when you think back at it, Gemma Bonner's arrival in January and the fact that she lit that line, that also helps Emma Kulvista, because the gap between the two boxes is smaller. So she can do what she can do in a smaller area, more effective. By the end of the season, I thought she's been brilliant in the last couple of months. She's, you know, undoubtedly the number one right back, which I think kind of Liverpool needed was like just a bit of consistency in the back line, and they had that with her. Overall, when you reflect on the entire season, I think she's done a good job. It took me a few months to, I was always thinking, you know, come on, just give us what I'd kind of hope that you had and that I've seen that you've got. And by the end of the season, you know, she did that. So I think going forward next season, hopefully she'll go up another level.
Yeah, before we do our player and games of the season, I want to give Neil, you can have a word on Kerry Holland, because she has been outstanding consistently really for the majority of the season. And she's a really key player and one that I hope Liverpool can keep hold of into the summer, into next season and beyond, because she's such a talent for the future as well.
It's so important Liverpool keep hold of her, it really is. And I think that, you know, it's two seasons, well, one and a half seasons now of being absolutely outstanding. I think she is another footballer who makes the players that she plays with better. I think that her ability to cover ground, remain tactically very, very astute, and remain technically solid, I think is really important, because, my God, do we make a run. She covers some ground, Kerry Holland. She does every single time that she plays. And, you know, I think she's, you know, there's two contenders for me for player of the season, and I think she's, you know, she's in the top two, it's worth saying. And I think also the fact that she has a level of poise in front of goal as well really, really helps. You know, there isn't a bit of a game really that you feel as though she needs to work on, other than the fact that I don't think she's hit a ceiling yet. You know, I don't think there's a particular attribute that I think is lacking in terms of what she offers in the middle of the park. And that's why I do worry that she could end up somewhere else. The one thing I would say is that I just don't think she'd get the same number of consistent starts and appearances somewhere else that she gets at Liverpool. I think she'd become a cog in a significantly proportioned squad machine if she was to go to one of the top four offers, where the top four offerings, whereas I think at Liverpool, she can have absolute certainty that, you know, she will get 94 minutes. Maybe she won't, but maybe she's thinking to myself, my God, this is a lot of 94 minutes and I'm asked to do a lot. But I think that, you know, she will get that time on the pitch at Liverpool every single time. And I think that she's absolutely earned that and deserved that. And I think that, you know, if she, I think Liverpool need to keep her for at least one more year. And then I think the idea of seeing where everyone's up to, Kerry herself and those sides that I've just sort of referred to, might be no bad thing. But I think her having and knowing that she's the first name on the team sheet, which I just think she will be into next season, I think that means or should mean as much as the idea of anything else. And then within that, that's where perhaps the idea of finding a route through a little bit of a cup run or something, so there is the possibility of a big stage and or silverware at some point, would be massive. But I think Liverpool have got to keep hold of it. I really do.
Yeah, when you said... Go on, John. Yeah,
I was just going to say that Emma made a point before on squad evolution and what it's been. And I think, first of all, it's worth re-emphasising that and just remembering just how far that they have come with that, really. Like, you know, there was a couple of years ago when they didn't go up in the Championship and that season, you know, it was basically only Rachel Furness who was worth watching. Some weeks you'd look at the team sheet and if she wasn't playing, you were like, oh, I might stay in the Clipper. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like she was the only shining light of that year, really. Maybe that's a harsh on a couple, but generally speaking, you know, she was the only one who looked, you know, worthy of you know, being in the team, in a team that you wanted to watch anyway. And then, so for us to get to a point this season where she's got to move on to get game time, and that's over the period of 18 months, really. We've effectively, the team's moved beyond her, and I say that as a massive, I was going to say the biggest Rachel Furness fan, I think that's Andy Bell, to be fair. But
Emma's putting herself in, yeah.
Absolutely livid about that.
he's got Queen and Country as well on his side here. King and Country now, should I say. But I think, you know, for us to get to that point where she goes from being like by far the best player and to someone who has a say, you know, feels like she needs to move on in just 18 months is huge. And I think the club deserve a lot of credit for that, for doing that in quite a short period of time when like Emma said, it has felt more evolution. And I mentioned before that they started the season actually not doing much and sort of giving people a go, but evolution works a lot better when you keep people and you just keep adding people. And so that's why I wanted to make that point with regards to Kerry Holland. It's all about building on what we have. And if you lose one, then it's a step or two back. And that makes evolution a lot harder.
Well, I'd like a player in a game of the season from all of you. So have a minute to think while I ask Emma what you think Liverpool are going to do this summer and the areas that they really need to strengthen in as well.
Yeah, well, I sort of touched on it before. You know, I'd like to see just getting, you know, a real quality fullback in, whether or not that's to challenge Taylor Hines or to challenge Emma Corvisto. I think either side, I think we're lacking in depth. So I'd like to see that. And I think just given kind of the age of the sort of the centre backs, obviously we've had a lot of centre backs over the last couple of seasons, but I think, when you're talking about evolution, I think you need to be thinking about kind of bringing in a younger age group. So obviously we've seen the likes of Meg Campbell leave already. So yeah, I think some kind of the next generation of centre backs. And then just a little bit of attacking quality, because I think again that there'll probably be a couple of those that might leave, and it's certainly in the next year. And obviously we've had fitness issues in those areas. So just to provide, again, a bit of competition for Katie Stengel. They'd be the three main things for me.
Top of the shopping list. Right, John and Ted, you've had lots of time to think. So give me your player of the season and game of the season.
Player of the season, I'm going to stick with Kerry Holland, despite Atkinson's strong persuasive arguments the other night when we were having a drink and watching the awards. But I'm going to stick with Kerry Holland just because I think she's been the most consistent and high performing. And I think if I were to do match ratings every game and then add them up at the end, I would imagine she'd have the highest average. So I'm going to go stick with Kerry Holland, but plenty of choices, which is a nice place to be in.
And game?
Game, it probably is just that very first one, because it was just so special. It was just lovely driving to Prenton Park and struggling to park a car. You know what I mean? Like, in a really nice way. I was like, I mean, because, you know, I mean, obviously we did a season with effectively behind closed doors. You know, we were lucky enough to be there as working media, but, you know, so it was always going to be busier than that. But to have seen, you know, when I used to go, my dad was back at Widnes when it was, and when they started to struggle a bit, it was 200 or 300. So to drive up to see the big sky cameras and all that were there, and the, you know, the big, you know, things on the vans and stuff that they have. This is very technical. You know what I mean? The big things, the big things that make telly work.
Showing off that you're in the industry.
those big things on the top of the vans that make the telly work. there was loads of them, and you just thought, this is boss. This is a big deal. This is back in the big time. And then they won, which I wasn't expecting at all. I don't think anyone was. The bookies certainly weren't. And so to get all that, it was just a real magical day. And like I said, it probably, you know, gave us false expectations a little bit. I was like, maybe Champions League football here, you know. But it was still fucking brilliant.
Right, Atkinson's persuasive powers then. Are you going with someone else?
Yeah, I'm going with Katie Stengel. In lots of ways, I just think she's the absolute business. And I think she's shown it all the way through the campaign. I think Kerry Holland's been great, don't get me wrong, but I do think goals pay the rent. And that was a big deal for Liverpool over the course of the campaign. So yeah, I'm firmly with Katie Stengel, to sort of emphasise this point. I've been really lucky to meet loads of footballers, Liverpool players, across the last however many years. And I've had my photograph taken with a few of them, but sometimes if I say I need corralling, it's just a little bit like I just sort of think I'm here to do a certain thing and then get off. Whereas I was unbelievably excited to get my picture taken with Katie Stengel on at the awards. It was the only one I wanted. It was the one that I got. Heather sorted out for me. So thank you very much to her. Yes, I was, and I look sufficiently starstruck on the picture. So that one and Katie Stengel for me.
And game.
West Ham at home. I wasn't at Chelsea at home first game because I was in Chicago. I was actually in a conservatory, a very big conservatory, a famous one in Chicago called Lincoln Park. And I was taking my time, very deliberately going around, but consistently checking my phone because I basically got in at about 30 minutes. And then I was in this conservatory for an hour and 15 and was like increasingly getting het up as this worked on because I couldn't believe it was like the worst version of watching it on teletext. I was just basically watching it on everyone's Twitter and like, oh my God, and this is how this is playing out. Because I remember saying to Sam when we were waiting to go in, I said, oh, it's 1-1, but they're going to get absolutely whacked in the end. And then it very much doesn't transpire that way. And it was absolutely brilliant to see from afar. But I was at the West Ham game, and I don't think it's just the idea of, you know, obviously that they won. I think it's the fact that they play them off the park. For 45 minutes, they absolutely battered them. And it just meant everyone knew, you know, the players themselves knew they're better than West Ham United. And I think that as soon as they could make the peace with the fact that they are better than West Ham United, because you don't just do that to a team by accident. It wasn't a smash and grab, and then a rear guard action or anything like that. They absolutely take them to the cleaners for 45 minutes. West Ham don't have a shot. They can't get out their own half. It's almost like this whole thing's come as, like, West Ham almost like they didn't know there was going to be a game, and Liverpool were on another level. And so I think that that's a real arrival moment of, we're not as good as insert name of Champions League team here, but we're better than these, and these expect to stay up. And I think that really coalesced the whole season off the back of, as Emma said before, two results that were frustrating at the time, the 2-3-3s against Brighton and Reading on the road, but suddenly there you've put a run together and that has massive meaning and significance, and so it is that game, and it's more than that, it's that 45 minutes.
Emma, over to you.
Yeah, I actually, I voted for Kerry Holland as player of the year, but I have actually been persuaded by the powers of Neil Atkinson. When I've actually sat down and thought about it, I think because I'm a bit of a sucker for kind of the underdogs, and I think goal scorers get so many headlines, and maybe that's why I went for Kerry Holland, because I think she's the end of the team. But actually, when I sat back and reflected and listened to what Neil and like a few others have said, and you look at the stats and you look at the big moments, it is Katie Stengel. So I have changed my mind. I think she is the player of the season. But I think, you know what, those two, there's not much in it at all. I do think if we hadn't have had the injuries up front, as well. That has had an impact, because not only has Katie Stengel as an individual performed, she's had a hell of a lot of responsibility because of the injuries to the other forwards. So that probably just takes her over the edge for me. And game of the season was the Katie Stengel show against Chelsea. I've obviously I covered the WSL for years now with work. Obviously I've, you know, followed it as a fan. So there was a lot of emotions that day. Late rewrite. I may or may not have took a little bit longer to start writing the match report because I might have been doing a lot of celebrating in the press box. extremely unprofessionally. Next to a Manchester United player, actually. But yeah, it was. Yeah, I just didn't see it coming. And it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't like it was a fluke. You know, Liverpool did their jobs and they did their work and they deserve the result. So yeah, it's got to be the Chelsea game. It's got to be Katie Stengel.
Well, Liverpool are in the WSL for another season. Thank you very much for joining us for that season review. Neil, Emma and John, I've been Harriet Pryor. I don't think I said that at the start, but you all know who we are by now, don't you? That was a lovely season to watch, and hopefully next season will bring us plenty more moments as we keep climbing up that WSL table. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for sticking with us and see you soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.